Hello, everyone.
Greetings.
This is one of our rare Wednesday startings, and yes. It's March 31st, 2021, so the last day of March, which is kind of like the end of winter for us, I guess, in Minnesota, although that keeps moving around because of this climate change business, if you believe in that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it could be the beginning of blizzard season.
I mean, back in the day, it's like, oh, it's not quite April. For another couple of blizzards, I reckon. Now it's like, well, I guess not anymore.
It's like time to plant vegetables.
Yeah. And this is episode 185. That's a sturdy number. I don't know about numerology and whatnot, but 185 has a sturdiness.
It's solid.
And a tenacity to it that I appreciate.
It's only 15 away from 200.
Yeah, 200, like, we keep promising some sort of celebration with these real number ones. We haven't been able to deliver, but I'm just gonna have a bottle of cheap tequila, and I'm just gonna down it for the episode 200 and be like, woohoo, and I'll shoot my guns in the air, like, yay, celebration.
There we go.
Maybe throw a tire on the fire.
Maybe we'll have a little candle. Change Bubo's oil.
Well, did you find the... Is there a flap for that? Where do you put the oil in Bubo?
Well, it's a robot bird. You got to get oiled.
Somewhere, but I don't know where. Yeah.
Greetings to everybody that's saying hi to us.
Yeah,
and we were that a lot.
And we were, normally we start on Mondays, but I was out of town and my car broke down an hour outside the Twin Cities. And I stayed overnight in a hotel. And we blew the head gasket on our minivan. So now we're trying to figure out if it's fixable.
It's the worst.
You know, and it's like these, I mean, I'm trying to segue now. Possessions, man, you know?
Okay. Yeah, Who are we and what is our topic today?
I'm Mark Van Steenhoek. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And we are going to talk about housing and property related issues this week, which, you know, are very, very relevant to all the things that are going on.
Totally.
I mean, so in the national news, the CDC re-upped this ban on evictions because there are 8 million households in America. I mean, this is really a just like mind-blowing number to me.
Yeah.
Right? 8 million households in America that are behind enough on their rent or mortgage to warrant eviction. So, you know, the average household number in America is, I think, like 2.3 or something. So, you know, that's almost 20 million people that are severely housing insecure. There's probably then an equal number that are almost housing insecure. And so this is, you know, this is the quote, wealthiest country in the world. So, you know, and then when we look at issues, other related issues of poverty and hunger and things like that, one of the things that often comes up is housing insecurity, issues of gentrification.
Yep.
So we thought we would talk about that.
Fun stuff as always.
Yes. Yes. So I just want to start out the conversation by saying that from my perspective, the notion of private property, I'm talking about real estate property, not like I own a pen. But
most Marxists would put that under this other category of personal property, which is confusing. Just to be clear, the obvious, I understand why people are like private property. You're going to take my toothbrush? Like, I get why you go there, but that, there's more nuance to it than that.
Yeah. So the notion of private real estate, I would say, represents an incredibly disordered relationship that human beings have with the rest of creation.
Yeah.
I mean, every time I think about it, I just, I, there's part of me that just laughs. I mean, it's a category that to me is completely nonsensical. The idea that I, as this embodied, slightly animated pile of compost.
Some of us are more slightly animated than others.
Yeah. You know, somehow owns this other part of creation in any way that's meaningful beyond an oppressive social construct just strikes me as a disordered fantasy.
Yeah, and there are layers to this. Like, okay, so a family who has exclusive access to an half acre where their house is and where they garden, that's private property. But it's like, okay, that makes sense, because that's the amount of land and space you'd need to use in order to be housed and care for yourself. Okay, everyone should probably have something like that. Okay. But then there's like this private property, like where I'm like, I own 5,000 acres and I lend it out to tenants, and then I extract resources from the land and from those people. And it's my right, because through some sort of divine right, this is my land in perpetuity for me and my descendants for all times until I decide to sell it. And then there's the beyond that, like factory owners, like I employ 5,000 people and all the profit that they generate is all for me, not for them. And if they try to organize as a union and try to get more of it, then F them. Like, and so then you get all the way up to like the Jeff Bezos kind of Elon Musk sort of situations. And so if you say, oh, private property, Elon Musk, Jeff Bezos, then some guy who runs a shop out of his garage, like, this is my property. If you go after Jeff Bezos, you're going after me. Like, so there's this, like, all the complexity of that whole chain of private property understandings is somehow baked into, this is my house and I should be able to do whatever I want to it. I'm like, okay, that right. collapses everything down into that meaninglessness at that point.
So you know who owns the most farmland in America? This is a good quiz for our listeners. Anybody that gets it right gets to give us a party on our 200th episode.
Owned farmland. It's not a government.
Yes. No, who owns the most farmland in America? Librarian, guess. Get on this.
I mean, I could Google it right now, but that'd be cheating.
No, that'd be cheating. Yeah.
Farmland. Wait, is it a university?
No, it's a person.
Gary Busey? I want that to be true for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't know
why. Yeah. No, it's Bill Gates.
What?
Yeah.
Bill Gates owns a bunch of farmland?
Bill Gates owns a big bunch of farmland, right?
Because he loves his corn? What's going on?
Yeah, well, it's all this, you know, it's exactly what you were talking about. It is all this investment farmland. And what's particularly interesting to me about it is the geographic distribution, because a lot of it is in the South. Mm-hmm. He owns, like, for example, 60,000 acres of farmland just in Alabama. And, you know, all of that is then rented out to tenants. And, you know, he's making a shit ton of money off of that. Right?
In Minnesota, we have a saying here. It's elsewhere, too, but a lot of oofta. That's an appropriate use of oofta.
Yeah. Oh my and, God. You know, and the thing is that the other big issue that gets tied to all of this often in the public discourse, right, is this, this notion of gentrification, right? Yeah. So you hear a lot about this.
We've been in urban context, predominantly.
Yeah, in urban context. We've been hearing a lot about this in Minneapolis and St. Paul. Right. And, you know, and of course, often this, you know, this gets blamed on developers, this gets blamed on, you know, white people, you know, this, but what it almost never gets blamed on is the basic system of private property and capitalism.
Yeah.
Because the truth is that it doesn't matter who you are, right? But if you just take care of your property, right? You will become a gentrifier. Because if property is in a capitalist system and it's supply and demand and prices can keep going up. And then the other thing that I really never hear talked about is property tax, which is by far the most regressive tax that exists, right? It has nothing to do with your income, with how long you've lived there, you know? And so, like, for example, I've got all these elderly neighbors who I'm sure are mostly living off of Social Security. You know, none of them are wealthy people. Maybe they got some retirement income of some other kind coming in, but they don't own the most farmland in America, that's for damn sure. And their property tax is just going up and up and up and up. And of course, that's going to price them out of their homes. At a certain point, they're just not going to be able to afford that, right? And so these two systems simply create the reality that that property is going and housing is going to become unstable, unjust, and not affordable.
Well, and of course, you know, then that brings it like that'll lead to racism. Like, even if you don't, I mean, because who has more access to the resources? Like, right. You know, so this is where it comes in.
And well,
so,
it's
like,
connected to
it's
racism.
It's connected. Yeah. It's totally all interconnected.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, to me, like the example that you started off with, right, the family that's got a house and half an acre to grow vegetables, I think there's still the question of what is the, quote, ownership status of that, right? What is the relationship that we have to that? So to even say that family somehow owns, right, in the sense of like absolute control.
Yes.
Where now I can employ the force of the state to keep other people off of that land, right? Because that's a huge part of private property ownership, right?
And a big part of why the police exist, is to protect private property.
Private property, yeah. Right? Now you've set up this entire system, right, that fundamentally is anti-personhood, is anti any kind of healthy relationship with the rest of reality and the rest of the environment. And is going to become highly problematic, right? And there's some funny examples of this. So one of the things that people talk about that caused the French Revolution. So France didn't have a primogeniture system of passing down owned property, right? It didn't go just to the elder child. Land was distributed amongst all the children. By the time of the French Revolution, 10% of the agricultural land in France was underneath stone walls because the land had been divided up so many times, and that was creating food insecurity because all that land that used to be farmed was now used to divide private property.
That's bizarre. And it's interesting, like, you know, we have this narrative, like, and I'm not praising feudalism, and I'm sure I've talked about this before on the broadcast because I talk about it all the time, but we act as though somehow capitalism is like, finally, we're free from feudalism. So what happened is back in the feudal, like, let's talk about England, back in feudal England, you had the lords of the manor and they had their land and they were vassals to other lords, blah, blah, blah. But then there were the serfs. But lords couldn't just go murder serfs at will, and they couldn't just kick them off the land. They had some sort of they have a boundedness to the land. And we talk about that as a negative thing, but there's also a positive thing. Like, they had access. There were commons. They had rights. Mm-hmm. And then with the enclosure laws, which we see under Henry VIII, there were like, 70,000 people killed under Henry VIII because they wouldn't, when the land was enclosed, and now we have private property. Like, really enter into what the consciousness of feudal England. Now you had to either be a laborer or a tenant. And before that didn't exist. Those weren't the categories. And so if you weren't a tenant paying rent to the landowner, mm-hmm. or a worker, you were a vagabond or a vagrant. And there were these anti-vagrant laws. And if you refused to abide, you could be executed. So 70,000 people were executed under Henry VIII for refusing to either be tenants or workers.
And many more starved.
And then a lot of people were just had a shitty existence. And so that was actually a step backwards from feudalism for a good chunk. Yeah. And it's based on this idea that someone can be private property is the extension of divine right logic. That's really, mm-hmm. we need to really accept that. That somehow and it's the most sacred category in Western society, and particularly the United States, property ownership. And it's the extension of conquest logic. And the idea that somehow that if you're an orphan, it makes sense that somehow you wouldn't inherit anything, but then someone like Jeff Bezos's kid is somehow more worthy based on some sort of mythic logic. That's bizarre as hell. And already you're undercutting any sort of sense of human rights, because then if for that orphan to have enough to live becomes dependent upon the vast generosity of Bill Gates and his charities, which exist to justify his ridiculous lordly wealth.
Yeah. We got some good comments coming in. Should get to those.
Going back to earlier on, some comments about weather. I'm just going to skip over it because we've moved on from that. CK writes, unfortunately, there's no housing justice, just forced migration.
Right.
Totally. Like, you don't have any right to stay in a place. Like, once your lease is up, which is there more to protect the as much to protect the owner than it is the tenant. Once you can be forced out.
You know, and CK, you bring up migration. And this is why we say that this topic connects to everything, right? So people are flipping out about what's happening at the U.S. southern border. Many, many of these people are coming from Central America. In fact, mm-hmm. at this point, probably the majority of them are coming from Central America. In Guatemala, 8 families own 85% of the land in the entire country. Right? 8 families. Now, you know, even if these are like big families, you know, that is by nature going to cause your country to collapse at some point. So what Mark, what you just described about what happened in England under Henry VIII, that's what's happening. Right. And so you have this population, and most of that land, what is it used to grow? Coffee. Which means that for the average peasant, they have no access to any way to feed themselves. And then they show up at the U.S. southern border, and then we're like, oh my God, there's evil people, you know, get them out of here, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's like, why do you think they're here?
Like, we love your coffee, but you're human yeah. garbage. Please go away.
Right.
Yeah. It's absurd. And so then there's all these statistics. It's mind boggling. Like, we have greater wealth inequality in the United States than in the Roman Empire. Like, people are like, what? It doesn't make any sense. Well, it's because of this. Like, somehow we have it baked in our mind that somehow I'm equal to Bill Gates because we have the same, we are abiding by the same laws. I'm like, no, we're not.
No,
we're not.
All right. Let's keep rolling.
Susan writes, how are other countries handling housing during the pandemic with income insecurity? Did the citizens get paid more than 600 stimulus or 1400 stimulus?
Oh yeah. I mean, most, what are called advanced societies, which is a horrible way of putting it, but, mm-hmm. People have retained a huge percentage of their total income. Right. So, So it's a completely different kind of setup in most of these other places.
Yeah. Well, and there's all kinds of laws that protect tenants and stuff in other countries too that
right.
we might don't have.
Yeah, that we don't have.
Yeah. You know, Gus writes, though, if you want a super interesting take on quasi-Marxist shared personal property, check out Seriously Wrong podcast and their series on what they call library socialism. They have like a 5-part series on it. And cool. just a different leftist divide between personal and private property differently, but a good way of looking at it is personal property is the stuff that you generally use for your own self and your family. Private property is generally something you own that you can extract wealth from. So some people would say, well, a house is always private property. But someone like Simone Weil, for example, would say, well, your own home for you and your family can still be personal property because everyone should have it, a car, personal property, your stuff. But then if you, as soon as you have like a duplex and you rent it out to someone, that becomes private property. Okay. And then of course the ethics of that become squishier, but it's this interesting thing to think about because the question of what you need to use in order to be a thriving human being is a different consideration than how can I make money off of this? Okay. Khan writes, yeah, but he's saving the world with all his riches. That,
yeah.
Philanthropy, yes. Covers over a multitude of sins.
Yes.
We could have a whole...
The PR of philanthropy covers over a multitude of sins.
Because you know what? Like, Bill Gates having all that money to fix malaria. I mean, if the people of Africa had access to that wealth and voted democratically, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't vote to eradicate malaria. Like, this is the thing. Philanthropy is hugely undemocratic. And so this idea that somehow someone doing some nice things with their wealth justifies the wealth is strange, as though somehow a bunch of individuals with less money wouldn't decide to do good things with their money. It's a weird logic that we use to justify things. Leah writes, how can there be my land when everything was stolen to begin with? How can anything living be owned? Yeah. I mean,
yeah, I mean that, you know, that's exactly, that last question is to me the bottom line question, right? And, you know, so, I mean, if you look at human beings wandering around the planet, or, you know, depending on the latest timeline, 1 million to 2 million years, I mean, this is simply a collective ecosystem. This is not the idea that has been created that a piece of this is primarily controlled by a person as if it is somehow separate from the rest of the ecosystem. As I said, this is a primarily disordered concept of relationship.
It's the opposite of spirituality.
Yeah.
In the best sense. Like, I mean, if you want to just go all Buddha about it, like it's the kind of the key, it's the key Buddha thing. Like, oh yeah, we're all the same. We're all interconnected.
Well, but it's not just Buddhism, right?
No, I know. I mean, yeah.
You know, the basic understanding of the land in the law is that the land is there for the use of the people to, for everybody to have enough to eat and for everybody to have enough to live in.
Yeah. I mean Jubilee laws, gleaning laws, the idea of return, like all this sort of stuff. I want people to be fundamentalist about that. That'd be great. CK writes, our apartment was flooded because the upstairs tenants don't know how to shower for the 8th time in 2 years. And when the maintenance guy came 3 days later, he said Mint Properties has bought so many more properties that they don't have enough maintenance people to care for the tenants because they're all tied up fixing and remodeling the new property. I mean, as long as they're making money off you and you're stuck with them.
Yeah.
That shows the imbalance of like this whole arrangement. Like tenants don't have the power. Like you can't evict your landlord. Well, you can.
Right.
And glorious examples in like Irish Revolution and stuff. You see examples of this all the time of people getting rid of the landowners. But it's such an unequal power dynamic. Right. So it becomes so accepted that we don't think about it that way. We somehow like think, well, it's their property and they're not a bad landlord. So, you know, I'm not going to complain.
Yeah. And so, you know, even this series of relationships that you describe through that story, right, that gets set up and put in everybody's mind about, you know, who can fix what and whose stuff is what and why aren't people working together to take care of this building that houses them, and this notion that the property is sort of disposable because I'm renting it. So sure, I can, you know, take a shower and flood the place and ruin the the place and inconvenience the people below me. And, you know, then if you don't have enough money to hire people to go fix things, then other people suffering, right? I mean, you could dissect that entire story and show how this one starting point of disordered relationship leads to a cascade of disordered relationships, where basically, you know, everybody becomes a non-human actor, right, in this money-making enterprise. And it's unbelievably toxic.
Yeah. I mean, this, you know, the other day I posted this little statement on Facebook, the myth of property rights is the root of all kinds of evil. And I got all kinds of pushback from very progressive-minded people. But somehow this is a categorically unfair statement as opposed to the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil, which to me is almost the same statement. And even in Jesus' day, it was almost the same statement. This idea of being attached to wealth, like that's the idea. That's the love of money. And that's the protection of property rights as sacred. It's the same thing. And, you know, we can't even conceive of an alternative because in our mind, the only alternative is to have like the ghost of Stalin and Castro coming and putting us in bondage and like taking all the money and say, now you have to live in a cement box, blah, ha, ha. Like that's because we're so propagandized and thinking that's the only alternative. No. As though there aren't a million years of human history before the idea of property rights came up as a concept at all. Leah writes, if land is for a living place, why is ownership necessary? The only reason is to make a profit. Therefore, a market for land prevents real stewardship of the land itself and prevents it being used for housing and living. It becomes solely a commodity. And that's the thing. Like, there are other ways to think about, like, if the concern is I want to be able to live somewhere and grow stuff without feeling the threat of someone coming and taking it from me, that's a valid concern because that's happened. There are ways of maintaining that integrity and safety without this idea of private property being passed down to descendants in perpetuity.
Well, and you know, this is why this really is a spiritual thing, as you just said, because, you know, this is a disordered relationship with the rest of creation, and it's a reflection of a disordered internal relationship that we have with ourselves and with each other and with the creation as a whole, right, with God. You know, so when Jesus talks about loving self, loving neighbor, loving God, this is a creation of a non-disordered set of relationships. And so, of course, if, you know, I don't care about somebody else and I'm bigger than they are and I'm like, well, they got a nice piece of property, so I'm going to take the stick and I'm going to whack them and I'm going to take their stuff. Yeah, that's problematic, right? And so, you know, and so really, to me, this is where our own spiritual life and practice and community is going to naturally get us to also want to reorder our relationships with all these other things, both animate and inanimate.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen writes, not too far from us, a bunch of people lost their homes to things like hospital expansion and the construction of a NASCAR speed track. NASCAR is essential. It's mostly people of color who are pushed out.
Yeah. And I mean, it just happens over and over and over again. And you know, if property is part of this capitalist system, that is always going to happen.
This next comment, I'm trying to look it up. Maybe this is from Khan. Can you address Leviticus 25 and if that is a practical solution for today? So I'm going to look up Leviticus 25 because I don't know it off the top. Oh, the Sabbath year.
Yeah.
Okay. So Jubilee. Okay. That's what I thought.
Jubilee.
Kind of. I mean, there was a whole system to reinforce this idea of Jubilee. So I think the spirit of Jubilee could be explored. I don't know exactly what it looked like in our society because, I mean, Jubilee was based upon a tribal arrangement in the ancient Near East. So we'd have to figure out our own way. But like, to me, at the end of the day, the idea, it's the only, look at who owns the land. It's bizarre to me, especially using that Guatemala example. I would imagine that those eight people who own most of the land are probably not super indigenous. That's just an assumption. Maybe it's a wrong one. But it reminds me of the story. I have some very close friends who, her parents in Peru, lived with a bunch of other people in this area, and they had kind of like long-standing squatters' rights. It wasn't like they inherited it, but it was, they're mostly indigenous descendant people. And some woman who didn't even live in the country, I think she lived in the United States, was able to pay a judge to give her property rights over everything, and then all these squatters were kicked out. That's an example. Like, to me, property rights in the United States are almost certainly an extension of rights of conquest. So like, we start thinking, like, what does Jubilee look like? Well, it's, to me, it looks like things like reparations. It looks like some sort of like land reform. It looks, the question becomes complicated because a lot of us, we have reasons not to trust the government's capacity to redistribute wealth. So we have, the question is, how do we do that? What does it mean to redistribute and make sure everyone has what they need? And it's right to be afraid and concerned about that, because like, I don't want to end up like, I don't want to be the Soviet Union. That was a bad example of communism put into practice. But something like vast redistribution and access, like the Jubilee, I think is needed.
So because this is a two-part series, we're going to get to continue this on Friday, but maybe we could
blast a few of these.
Well, and this Catherine's comment, I think, is maybe a great place to jump, springboard for Friday.
Okay, so Catherine's comment, given how likely rising property taxes are to screw over less wealthy homeowners, can you explain why middle-class homeowners so often fight so hard against any form of solidarity with neighbors, neighboring renters, and claim it is in their self-interest to keep property values high? What's in it for them? Are they just hoping to sell high someday?
Yes. Yeah, and that's a great example, again, of this ingrained, you know, we talked a lot over the year on the show about this issue of formation, right? And this is formative. I mean, the idea of private property and having equity in private property and private property being a good investment is so deeply ingrained in the American psyche. That it really is like embracing Satanism to talk about
for real
doing that. You know, people just completely flip out. Yeah,
which is ironic because the Church of Satan is libertarian. Just like that.
All right.
Just one more little comment, and this ties with Catherine, I think, where we're going to go. Like Timothy writes, at one time the left paid attention to the idea of the commons. That seems to have dropped off the radar. The question really becomes like, there are things to do. And so I think, imagine where we're going to go on Friday is, what do we do about it? Like, does that mean we should all divest and move into the woods and be squatters? Like, are there alternatives? What about land trusts? Like, so I'm imagining we'll explore like, well, what do we do about this scenario a little bit more on Friday?
And that's maybe we can end with Will's comment here, because I think that gets to it.
Hey, Will, glad you're able to comment. I haven't talked to you for a while. We need to work at the deep paradigms at work in capitalism. I think of indigenous and traditional people for whom the idea of owning land would have been utterly preposterous. We're also now starting to own water. Can we own air? Well, New York City, you can. This is my air and that's your air. I get more air than you.
Yep. All that stuff is coming, right? Water is going to start being traded on the commodities exchange next year.
I mean,
I don't know why.
It's so ridiculous.
Really freaking out about that, but that is a really bad thing. That is a really, really bad thing.
This idea of commoditization of natural, this is at the root of these pipelines. This idea that you can commoditize these sorts of resources that are part of our shared inheritance as creatures of Earth is bizarre. So we're going to dig into that on Friday, and hopefully we'll get somewhere constructive. But this is a big issue. So
sounds good. Great to see everybody, hear from everyone.
Yeah.
Enjoy your day.
See you in a couple of days. Bye.
Bye.